started. Jalene, is there anybody that we are expecting that is not here? I believe Kathy, Suzette.
They're all fine.
Okay. Sounds good. I'd like to welcome everybody here today. We appreciate the support and the attendance that we've got. And if we could, everybody would read over the minutes. We need to adopt the previous minutes.
Mr. Chair, I just have one change that I'd like to suggest based on what Gordon just pointed out, in that on the board members, both on the minutes and perhaps for today's agenda, the co-chair is not Gordon, but rather Ryan.
Correct. Maybe we can ask Julian to put that in the notes and make that change for next time. Thank you. If anybody wants to make a motion.
Take a motion to approve the minutes.
Second that.
He made the motion, Ryan seconded the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Okay, next. It says Brett was going to introduce the new member, but I am going to do that. We have here Lieutenant Katie Booth, who is with Summit County. She's worked in the corrections for about 20 years, and she's mostly, the majority of that time has been spent in the bail bond process. And she's been working with bond forfeitures, revocations, and she is currently the jail division commander at the Park City office. So we'd like to welcome Katie, and we appreciate the opportunity to have you here and the effort that you're going to put forth to enhance our board. Thank you very much.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Anything you want to add to that?
No, that's about it.
How many years?
20 years. Yeah. I hit my retirement day. Yep. Yeah, it's been an interesting 20 years. It's been fun.
Thank you for your service.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for serving.
Very much so. Do you plan on being there for a few more years?
A few more years, yeah. We'll see how comfortable I am, or, you know, elections go. We'll see how it goes with our next election. And it's nice to have the opportunity or the ability to say, I want to stay or I want to go. So right now, I'm still enjoying it, and as long as I'm enjoying it, I'll stay.
Well, we appreciate your service. Thank you very much. Executive session, I do not believe we have anything that requires going into the executive session. Anything you know of, Brett?
Not that I know of.
Okay, we don't need to approve anything. Licensing report for April and July. Brett?
Mr. Chair, if I may request a point of personal privilege and introduce the commissioner before I get into that.
I'm sorry.
It's not on the agenda. It was on last month. It's my fault.
We would appreciate that very much.
I noticed in the notes it got done last month, so please be brief.
Mr. Chair, members of the Bail Bond Board, and interested members of the public, I'd like to introduce to you Insurance Commissioner Todd Kaiser. Commissioner Kaiser was appointed by Governor Herbert in January of this year. Commissioner Kaiser has had over 30 years, and you'll appreciate this, as a small business owner, directly involved in the insurance business, as an agent, as an independent agent, as all of you are small business owners. I think you'll find that Commissioner Kaiser can relate with some of your struggles in making a living. Commissioner Kaiser also served for 10 years, was reelected 5 times as a Republican lawmaker here in the Utah House. We're pleased to have Commissioner Kaiser here with us. He brings a fresh perspective to the department, one from an agency side and one of a licensee, which is different than we've had in the past. And as a former legislator, he brings to the department the ability to get stuff done at the legislative body that we may not have been able to have done as effectively in the past. So with that, Commissioner Kaiser.
Thank you. Thank you. The only thing I would add at the risk of being lobbied heavily by them is that I consider Mike Bauckham and Iron Rich dear friends. I don't know how many of you know them. I don't know if they've served before, but I know they are involved with bail bonds. And I've heard some of their stories, familiar with some of the nightmares that you guys face.
Welcome, Commissioner. We appreciate the opportunity to have you serve on this board. Or to serve over this board.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, unfortunately, this feels like the Brett Barrett agenda with, because we had to move the meeting date, it conflicted with several of Commissioner's staff's prior engagements or plans for annual leave. So you'll probably be hearing a lot more from me today than you'd like. In your packet, you'll find the licensing report for April and July. I'll note that per the minutes and per Gordon's request at the last meeting, his name is on the list here, the bottom of the first page. So thank you for bringing that up and allowing Suzette to go back and make certain that there wasn't an oversight there. Oh, instead of April and July, April through July. Yeah, can we make that change, Jolene? Is on the, I guess it'll reflect in the minutes that the licensing report was for April through July and not April and July. Thank you.
Everybody's had a chance to look at those. Brett's going to give us the summary of enforcement reports.
The summary of the enforcement reports is the longer report, the 8.5 by 14 page in front of you. I apologize, Mr. Chair, that I won't be able to answer any specific questions in Kathy's absence, but so if you want to table those, we certainly could, but the department wanted to get board the information.
We appreciate that. If anybody has any specific, looks like you probably wouldn't be able to give an answer any specific questions, so maybe what we can do is let everybody take a look and then table it and ask Kathy next week or next meeting if she could answer any questions we have.
I would ask for one question or point of conversation. You know, I see that we have these items going back to 2008. Do we need them back 5 years? Is that helpful to the board?
I don't believe it.
And I assume we just keep reprinting, you know, each month instead of adding the new ones. You want to go back that long or about 2 years?
This is actually the first time I think we've had them that far back.
Yeah, yeah. We haven't
this
ever had
the first one
back.
We've had.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. We discussed that last month about, okay. Well, maybe we'll leave it for now and you can noodle on
it. We can
it
discuss it next week. I think we talked about having it, having them on there, I think. Was it 6 months or a year after they were closed?
Yeah.
That's probably all we would need.
Well, you know, on second thought, though, this will also show you a trend.
Pattern.
You can see, you know, where the violations are, have been traditionally, whether they're continuing in those areas or whether they're new violations.
Is there a way it could be consolidated so if a new violation comes up, it'll show that they've also had violations and list that as opposed to all of the violations that are out there? Because you're going to have to go through and sort, and we don't see who the parties are.
Right.
So the department would be the only one that would be able
to. We wouldn't see that anyway.
Take a look, make a determination. So as an example, if you looked at where there's a break, 55, about midway down, it says 55, 55-2. So if we could show prior violations as an example, maybe one column, or list the prior violations.
So we're talking about on an individual basis, whether the individual, the unnamed individual, has had prior violations,
right.
That's what you're requesting?
Okay.
Is that, well,
that would help, otherwise it wouldn't show a trend.
This is just going to be a lot of data that's not going to really mean anything.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah,
because
I don't see any reason
identified
why it
by
could
by
be
case,
that.
Not by license number or name.
Okay. So a new column to indicate past
even
violations.
That might be redundant. What I'm wondering is if on any new violation, if it showed everything that had happened, and if there hadn't been anything new, it could be left off.
What?
If there's a new violation, it would show all previous violations, and after it was closed, unless there was a new violation, it wouldn't bring back the priors. Would there be any?
Well, what we're looking to see is if you have repeat violators. So this really doesn't tell us that.
No, exactly. What I'm wondering is
the department knows. So and we never know until it came to conclusion.
No, exactly. What I was wondering is if we need to list all the violations. Or if there's a new violation, if it showed all the previous violations under that company. And then once everything was closed, I don't know that it would do us any good
right.
to see it. So then
it
could
would
be
go
removed.
Off.
And then if there was a new violation, again, it would show all previous violations. But it would only show previous violations if there was a current violation,
right.
one that was over.
Right.
I just want to make that clear.
Okay.
If you go to the last page and pick the last one up, if that party had previous violations,
it
then you'd
show.
See.
Yeah.
Okay.
We were probably saying the same thing, Pete.
Yes. Yeah. Is there a way we could do it?
I don't know why.
Backwards.
These are largely done by hand, and so I don't see a reason why we couldn't. I'll have to check with Suzette and make sure.
Well, in Excel, they could just reorder it.
Yeah, and put in a new column, and every new violation that pops up, if they...
Well, that would probably be manual, that wouldn't be in the spreadsheet. But I'm saying...
Well, the spreadsheet is populated manually.
But if we looked at the spreadsheet of 2012 first, and then went back, as opposed to sifting through from 8th.
Yeah, we won't start from the beginning of time, we'll start from...
Most current,
and if there's an alleged violation, or confirmed violation will also indicate if there are prior violations for that individual or that company.
Perfect.
Okay. I think I got it. And we've got it all recorded too. So
it would show the violations and the outcome.
Okay. I think we would only show an outcome if the violation was founded, because accusations I don't think we want to have on here. I don't think that's fair or right.
For sure. Next, proposed penalties for board concurrence. None. New applications, there are none. Report on visits to jails and courts, Brett.
You know, I really wish that Kathy were here to be able to give this report because I'm very, this sounds condescending, I'm very proud of the work Kathy has done at the board's direction. As you recall, last January, the board asked and told the department that it would be helpful for the bail industry if the department would be out in the jails and making contact with the commanders and the I'm not sure the correct terminology, but the people that work there that have boots on the ground, to let them know that the department is a resource for them when a bail issue comes up. And we've sent Kathy all over the state to do just that. I'm not going to read through everything you have here in front of you, but I would like, for purposes of the record, just to highlight quickly the jails that she's visited since we met last. She's visited Cache County, Tooele County, Sevier County, Iron County, Washington County, Davis County, and then she's got at the end of the document here proposed court and jail visits where she continues to make those outreach efforts. The feedback that the commissioner and I get from Kathy is that when she visits the jails and the courts, they're thirsty and starved for her information and her feedback, and knowing that they do have a resource that they can utilize if they have questions about what is right and what is wrong, or just generally about bail. So I'm pleased to give Kathy's report, but I'm sorry that she wasn't here to give it herself.
Maybe we can put that on the agenda and let Kathy tell us more next time.
Just continue to keep it on there.
Yeah.
Let's just keep it on there for.
And by the way, I did not make copies of that for everybody, Brad. I didn't realize.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So we can do that.
Maybe if you can just.
I mean, it's
do
like
it
a three-page
time.
Document. I don't want to read the whole thing unless you want me to.
Do you want me to send it to you?
Yeah, I'll pass it around here. If
send it to us.
Send it to us, or maybe just get us a copy for next time. And I would like to say that's exactly what we wanted to do, because in this bail industry, what you find is every different piece doesn't necessarily understand what all the other players do. And that's why
sure.
I think it's going to be so important for Katie to be here. Every contact, we're all thirsty for that knowledge from the other sides and the other departments. Making sure that we can make this industry run as smooth as possible and the justice system be the best that it can be. And Kathy's and your participation are going to be key in that for sure. Wayne.
I might add that the association applauds Kathy's efforts. There's been great feedback from some of the accomplishments she's made, and we like what she's doing. So we're
hard to do it. Absolutely.
Thank you. If I might. Mr. Chair, I had as well, and her report to me, I just would only add of her excitement. She's terribly excited to be engaged this way with you folks, and I think we'll see some difference. Whether she likes getting out or not, I don't know, but there was an excitement in her voice. She's been well received, and it makes a difference. When you're going out as a regulator and you're seeing people and they accept you or they don't accept you, can make a whole difference in your attitude and what goes on in that meeting. And she's been very well received, and her excitement level seems very high right now, so I'm happy to see that.
We're equally as excited, and I think she has the personality that will bear this out. She's it'd be pretty hard not to like Kathy.
It is.
Okay, old business, amendments to R-590-186-8, investigating unprofessional conduct. Brett, would you take
Yeah, again, this is something that I really can't take any credit for. As you recall from the last board meeting, Terry had put this draft rule change together for the board's consideration. And as I recall, the board decided to table that because of the board was changing. Potentially, and to give the board a chance to digest it. So nothing has changed since the last time that you looked at this, but it's a discussion item, and You know, it talks a little bit more about the board's involvement in the investigation process and what it can and can't do.
I wonder if we should discuss it now or if we should wait until Perry is here, because I know Perry is the one that drafted this, and any questions would probably be directed towards her.
Well, you know, if the board has requests, I would suggest that we do discuss it now. And we've got a recording here. We'll certainly relay the information to Perry. If there's an open question that I'm not able to answer, I can follow up in an email to the board once I'm able to consult with Perry. And she's actually out of town on business. She has another client. She does bond stuff for the state, so she's engaged in that right now. But as much work as we can get done today, you know, I'll commit to do whatever I need to do.
Let's go ahead and read it then. Let's discuss it for any questions or any thoughts or anything that anybody might want to add.
So, Lieutenant Bluth, you probably read legislation before, but when we're looking at this, cross out is stuff we're existing or getting rid of, another line is new.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay, I kind of have a question. It says that we may investigate these things, and that says what we can do, but then it comes down and crosses out, you know, our investigative authority. So if we're going to investigate, shouldn't we have the ability to request subpoenas and documents and that kind of stuff? I mean, it just seems kind of like you may investigate these, but we're not going to let you investigate.
Well, as I recall, that first crossing out shall and making it may was to provide flexibility, so it doesn't sound like the board has to investigate everything.
Right, I understand that.
And so
if you read if you read all the way down, it says these are the things we can do. At the next meeting of the board, the commissioner shall present the board. And it goes on and says what we can do, but then it takes away, if we decide to conduct our own investigation, we really can't, because then it says recorded witness statements under oath. I mean, it would seem to me that if we're going to actually investigate something, we would probably want to be able to do that. But again, this comes to, you know, we don't have to do this, we may investigate it, but if a board gets a complaint, and we all decide as a board that, yeah, we want to investigate this complaint, we're going to take it out of the Department of Insurance hands, then our hands are tied. There's really nothing we can investigate, to me. I mean, it just looks like if we can't say to somebody, well, we want to see your records, and they say no, well, then we can't come in and get a subpoena and have them bring those records. I mean, I don't know, maybe
would that be something that we would do through the commission?
Yeah, I was going to say, my recollection is that the reason Perry changed this in this manner was because it was inconsistent with the board's statutory authority as far as conducting investigations. So what it says is, or request additional investigations. The board can say, Commissioner Kaiser, we want you and your team to look at this more closely and report back to us. But you're right. You're right, Gordon. It does take away what appears to be the rule now is the board can conduct its own investigation. The commissioner has subpoena power, but the bail bond board does not, at least in the law at this point in time.
Let me just say one comment. If you go up further before the new additions of eyes, it removes or conducts its own investigation. We've talked about that in a couple of meetings. That's a pretty dangerous territory for this group to be in.
And let the commissioner take the heat and just report.
Wayne's got a question.
Wayne?
When I'm reading this, actually D kind of opens it up for a recommendation of just about anything. So it doesn't exempt you from recommending anything. It kind of opens it widely to recommend whatever you feel is necessary. Am I seeing it right?
Well, certainly gives you, D gives a lot of power to the board. You can agree with me, you can differ, you can request additional information. So it seems to me like you have adequate ability to be able to investigate. I think Brett's point is probably very well taken, and that is that you probably shouldn't have the ability to subpoena as a board. You would probably come to the insurance commissioner for that anyway. You wouldn't go out and hire a separate investigative group to do it. You'd come to the insurance department, say under the leadership of the commissioner and his attorneys and staff, let's take this on and under our leadership try and solve the problem. We come back with a recommendation, and then the board has the ability to say, ain't enough, Kaiser. Want more done.
So I think we do have the ability. We just, it directs it through the commissioner. Everything we go through the commissioner.
Yeah, and then that new language, little I through little IV, really is what makes the insurance department accountable back to the board. I mean, the board is a creature of the insurance department, but there has to be. We don't want a black hole type of situation where the board is requesting stuff and they're not getting what they want back. And this outlines what the expectation is as far as the insurance department responding to the board's requests and the board's...
You know, I don't know, and I guess this would probably go to Perry, but the board may request a subpoena from the commissioner. I mean, you may want, I don't see, would the board request additional information? If the board requests additional information, do you want to get more specific? And 2I, you want to say these are things you could do? That's the only thing that I can see. I mean, I don't think the commissioner would say, I'm not going to issue a subpoena if the board requested one. But if you wanted to broaden the scope of some of the powers, that's where you might want to do it, be in. In two, little I two, double I, whatever that is.
So, if I'm hearing you correctly, Commissioner, maybe a suggestion could be, the commissioner shall reasonably conduct additional investigation, comma, including issuance of subpoenas, comma, in compliance with the policies and procedures of the Department of Insurance.
Well. I don't know.
Are you looking at the X out language?
I'm just looking at three. I'm looking at the X out language in little I three. I don't think you need to address witnesses may be compensated for their appearances. That looks like it's already in code 31A2301. But if you wanted it, if the board were uncomfortable and said, yeah, we want more power, we want to be able to request from the commissioner to do more than just do. Because all you get to do is request additional investigation. If you want to have power to say, you know, go get a subpoena on these people, then it gives you a little more power. I don't think you would ever be denied that by a commissioner, but that's, as I look at it, that's kind of...
Well, that was kind of my point. It's almost, since they changed this one word from shall to may, and I've discussed this before, and I don't want to beat a dead horse, but we used to get all this information on complaints, and once that word was changed, we're like just no information anymore. It's gone. So we basically, by changing one word according to Perry, basically the board, I don't know, what do we do anymore?
That was a statutory change, what, two, right. Four? It's before my time, I know.
Yeah, it was. And so she says, so basically since that point, that one word, I mean, from shall to may means we still may do it. We still may investigate something if we want. If the board votes to investigate it, we can investigate it. And I don't think that changing that word from shall to may has taken away as much authority from this board as it seems. And to me, just by taking all this out, it's almost like we're trying to make the board irrelevant to anything. And that's kind of the feeling I get. And I don't know why I feel that way with Perry, but it just seems like if we take away all these things, and I understand that we probably won't even want to investigate a case. I understand that. But there may become one circumstance where we do want to look into something, and I think we should be reserved to have that ability to do it. And I agree with Commissioner Kaiser and what he's trying to say, if I'm understanding him correctly. Maybe we should have the ability to say, hey, we do want you to subpoena these people. And I know you probably would anyway, but I think it just gives the board back a little bit more. And I, to me, the last 2 or 3 years, it's just like they've tried to take all the authority that this board has and just relegate it to, you know, nothing.
If my memory serves me correctly, that information that you had prior was given to you in error, and was given to you over a very long period of time. So you become accustomed to that. But nobody like this should have information about a party where there's allegations made that haven't been thoroughly investigated. Once you wouldn't appreciate it if you were on the outside and one of your competitors was sitting here. So once it's finally been determined by the department, that's when this board should have something to say. So if we have additional information about other acts, then we could say, did you look at this, this, and this, and they could report back. But I, you know, I've said from the beginning that this, for us, for this board to have any investigative authority, I think is inappropriate.
So what you're saying is, at the conclusion of the investigation, we would be privileged to more detailed information, or at any time
well,
during
once
the investigation,
it's been determined, right. There's a fine or a license revocation, then you know with the party, and then you know all of the other things. I don't know that there's an intermediate step where you may have information that the department may not have uncovered in its investigation. But you know, they're the ones that are tasked with the investigative process and determining the parties.
Would it be, what's your opinion on this, if Commissioner Kaiser was investigating a company and came to the board and asked questions and there had to be something specifically asked about a certain person or a certain company, can that be part of his investigation? Or should that be done on individual basis?
I can answer that from a legality standpoint, but then they'd be exposing which would be private information.
I think, and that's something that really should be deferred to Perry as the board's legal counsel, but as kind of a layman's interpretation, I would say that is something that could happen, but would need to happen in executive session, in a closed session, not in a public session, because you can have those executive sessions for purposes of character and that type of...
Okay.
That was my question, because that answers my question, because the true question is, we really can't help with an investigation unless we have some information.
Unless somebody comes to you. So if there is, because we're dealing with, unprofessional conduct, clearly defined in the other part of the statute. And so if the commissioner's got something, maybe we make an unofficial request on unprofessional conduct. We'd like to be brought into executive session to discuss this because we, or they, the industry people, may have additional information that may not
exactly
have been uncovered.
And if I could, Mr. Chair, just, and I should have done this in the beginning, is just reread the minutes of what we talked about last month with regard to this. They're very short. Perry provided a handout of the rule with proposed changes that will eliminate the may and shall conflict between the rule and the code. So I remember now that's why we're changing the may to shall. In the code, I'll read that really quick. 31A, 35201 says the board may conduct investigations of allegations of unprofessional conduct on the part of persons or bail bond sureties involved in the business of the bail bond surety insurance and provide the results of the investigation to the commissioner. So, according to your point, the statute allows the board to continue to do investigations. But that may to shall, the code said may, or I mean the law said may, the rule said shall, so I guess that's what was being corrected there. The second thing with regard to this rule is we discussed the unprofessional conduct and what it was. Perry referred to the list of unprofessional conduct in Rule 186-7. It was decided that the list included about every kind of misconduct. And then, as highlighted here, the department committed to bring to the board proposed penalties for their concurrence before taking action. again, that doesn't go to Gordon's concern with regard to the investigation, but it there's that penalty.
Wayne?
I think this does open it up to be able to do whatever you want. The only thing I can see that should be added to this would be, on occasion in the past, recommendation from the board, and then the department didn't act on it, with essentially sometimes with no explanation. I'd like to see a disclosure as to why the recommendation wasn't being acted on. That would be the thing I would add to this.
And also, would it be possible, if we leave names out, if the complaint comes in, could the complaint be brought to us generically? The name of the company taken out? That just, I think the only way that we're going to get any expertise in an investigation from this board is if we can hear a scenario, and then give some input on maybe how that could be investigated. Does that make sense?
Yeah, how do you know if you're going to investigate something if you don't know that there's anything to investigate?
Exactly, that's where we're at right now.
How do you know what you don't know?
That's where we're at right now.
So to Wayne's point, Wayne, on subsection 3, the commissioner shall present any additional findings to the board the next scheduled meeting. Does that alleviate your concern?
I think it touches on it, but it could just say we looked at it and couldn't find any additional information to pursue it further. But
so maybe get rid of that additional findings and just say the commissioner shall present any findings? Or report back? That's what you're looking for, right?
I'm just looking for some reply as to the board asked for this, but is not getting it necessarily. So an explanation as to why it cannot take place.
Instead of any additional, shall present findings.
Findings.
A way you just to get a report of what went on.
Well, my only concern there is if there are no findings.
That's the one.
Or maybe no findings is a finding in and of itself.
Exactly, just the result.
And that would be exactly what would take place on some cases, but I can recall in the past there's been times when a recommendation has been made where there was just no action taken, and that was it. That was the mute point from that day forward, and no real explanation as to why we're not pursuing it.
So the commissioner shall
present
findings to the board.
It has happened.
It would be nice, and there again, we would have to have a scenario before we could even say what were the findings, because right now all we get is complaint, closed, complaint, unfounded. What was the complaint? Many times, I think, and I'd like other board members to speak, but in the industry, you might hear a complaint, and I could, if there was a complaint against me, Commissioner Kaiser might investigate it, and I might be able to tell him something and appease him, where Ryan might say, do you know why I said that? Here's what you really need to check. Now, let me show you how to do this to where we really could get to the bottom of it. And that, I think, is where this board is supposed to come in, and the part they're supposed to play is we have the ins and outs. If we were going to investigate somebody, we might have the ability to do it at a totally different level because we are as part of the industry, in the industry.
You know, a good case in point is that big bond that was written last year on the suicide, and the board expressed concern about whether the appropriate
fee was collected.
And I know Kathy looked into that and reported back, but you haven't always gotten that.
We don't.
Well, they were going to look into it.
Yeah, we never heard back.
So we never heard what they found. That's case in point.
Yeah.
We don't know what they found.
They made a note. Yeah, we should check into that, and then that's the kind of stuff that he's talking about.
Looked into it, and I know her investigation indicated that the appropriate fee was given. But can we put that on the agenda for next month?
Let's put that on the agenda to get an answer on that. And I would like to, what I would like to hear from Kathy, and I'm not doubting her at all, but I would like to say how she found that, how she confirmed that fee was paid.
Okay. Well, what was the case in question?
Suicide of a Peterson.
Yes.
Greg.
Greg Peterson.
Oh, yeah. That was, you would know.
It was in my area.
Yeah.
Or close to.
I have a question on that particular case. Had the premium not been collected, what would be the problem? Out of curiosity.
10%.
I realize that.
10% rule. What you're saying is what should happen to the company?
Well, the person in the contract is no longer able to pay. You know, I mean,
but he's not in the contract though, because he should.
Maybe we don't know.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to figure out. Did they just let him sign for himself and put whatever else he had up, or you know, how did it?
Yeah, on his. Yeah, there's a number of things to be answered there, but I'm just saying. Theoretically, nothing could be wrong at any juncture based on the full amount was not paid, is all I'm saying.
Well, if there was a co-signer, which I would have a hard time believing, you wouldn't have a co-signer on $1 million bond.
But that's well, one of the questions you have.
Exactly. That's what
they
we want to know.
Yeah.
But I'm sure, I think everybody, every bondsman in this room probably got a call on that case. And that's why we're curious, is because we know what they had.
Yeah, we all know what they had.
We all know what they didn't have. And for somebody to say that got paid.
Yeah. I mean, you don't think I would have wrote that $2 million bond if I could have, any possibly way of wrote that bond. But here's a new company that's never had any experience. They step in and write it amongst all of us that have had 25 years of experience. You know, they're in business for, 3 months, and they step in and write a $2 million bond that not one of the other companies here could have wrote, and we all took calls on it.
And they're saying that a $200,000 fee was paid. When I know, and I think everybody in this room, the most amount of money that they could come up with through any of us was about 10 grand.
7,500, really? Actually.
Yeah, 7,500. they asked if they could put up some things to get it to 10. I doubt they came up with that additional 190.
And the collateral they had for the whole bond, wouldn't even have covered the fee, let alone cover the bond. So they had a $200,000 fee that needed to be covered. They had a piece of property up north and by Tremont that probably would have covered 75 grand on a good day. Yet that was their whole collateral.
That wouldn't cover 2 million.
It
wouldn't even cover the 200,000, let alone the 2 million.
This case in point is exactly what I'm talking about, because we know what we're talking about. We're discussing a certain case, a certain situation. Everybody has input, and there's no possible way for anybody to come up with this information without talking at this table.
I think that's an excellent case in point.
And the other problem with it is I'm not even sure if their qualifications gave them enough to write the $2 million.
Right, exactly. That was the other
question. And so they're writing a bond that they don't even qualify to write to begin with.
They're not surety backed. They were already
collateral
backed. Either way, they were qualified to write a $2 million bond. They may not be as far as what's open bail, but they were qualified, even if they qualified under the 250 rule.
Well, if they're 300,000,
they can't go
under the 250.
Yeah, they can't go under the 250.
They'd be 1.5.
They'd be 1.5.
So 300,000, they're good for 3 million.
No, they're good for
5 times. Yeah, 5 years in business.
So it's a million and a half if they didn't have any other bonds written. So chances are they didn't even qualify to write the bond.
Well, we don't know. If that's the minimums, what if they qualified with more?
And that's we don't know. Yeah. That's what we do need to know, and that's what we can bring to this table so that investigation could be done.
Actually, I thought that was brought up at the beginning, that they didn't qualify, that somebody in, as we were talking, said that they didn't qualify to write it to begin with. So they'd qualified with $1.5 million. They're at a $2 million bond, plus they don't collect the fees. So, I mean, there's a lot of problems that happen before you close that case.
That may have happened.
But we don't know.
They didn't collect it.
They didn't collect it.
I agree.
That's what the consensus is saying, but we may be wrong.
But we also
have to look
at what Wayne was saying, though. I don't do this, but I know people in this room do. You guys finance bonds. You've got a bond out there on a client, and he goes and kills himself. What are you going to collect?
The co-signer. In every case, every bond I write, there's a co-signer.
Right.
There should be.
Without a co-signer.
But there's
anybody
not a
that allows,
and if the one out of 20,000 kills themselves, then
Oh, well, I mean, if you had to take that,
I wouldn't touch a bond either. I mean, I'm with you guys.
It'd have to be one out of the 20,000 that kills himself. And that was the one bond that you let the defendant sign for himself on a $2 million bond. There's a better chance of...
Well, Brad, they were only in business 3 months.
That's what I'm saying. There's a better chance of everybody in this room getting struck by lightning when we walk out that door.
What was the name of that bond company? Do you remember? Someone with an A.
Look, you've got two types of bondsmen: risk takers who get lots of information and try to protect themselves. Then you have gamblers. And there's plenty of gamblers that would write a $2 million ballot. I'm telling you, there is. And that's the question we're asking here. We're questioning this one because the guy killed himself. And we're going, hey, what happened to that bond? But there's as many out there that are still out on bail today, that large bail that maybe weren't collected, the monies weren't collected also.
Cases just like this.
There's a bunch of them.
Yeah, lots of cases just like this. This one comes to point because we're all aware of it, but there's a lot of others out there just like this.
So what would your motivation be to take that kind of risk or gamble?
Hope you're going to get some money. Hope they're going to pay you. You have nothing.
But you're backing it.
Me backing it?
Well, the $2 million, you're on a case that public.
You don't have to go that big.
But I'm just saying, on a case like that, if that guy, if Peterson took off running, he's such a high-profile criminal that you're going to hope the U.S. Marshals or JCAT goes out and hunts him down for you.
Or the press.
You're going to
get a lot of help. Yeah,
yeah, you're going to get a lot of help. That's the risk that they're taking,
the gamble,
or the gamble.
That mitigates your risk because everybody in the world's going to look for it. You don't have to.
Yeah. Well, even
you're hoping they find him.
You're hoping they find him, yeah.
But even then, it was the bondsmen that found him. They were keeping pretty close tabs on him.
They ankle monitored the guy. I mean, here's another thing. A new company gets into business, and they write the high-risk bond, and then they're putting on their own ankle monitor. I don't think anybody else in this room, let alone anybody else in the industry, goes and ankle monitors their clients.
And the problem is, that bond goes bad, the courts go to them, they fold, they don't have $2 million to pay, they fold, and now every court hates every other bondsman in the state because that's what happens. They take that case in point, and they say, Brad, you do it, and Ryan, you do it, and Gordon, you do it, and we don't like any of you because we went, and now you're broke, and we don't have anybody to go.
It's not a $5,000 bond that somebody went bad on. It's a $2 million bond, and that one's going to get talked about and thrown around.
And then somebody comes up to the hill and says, let's make Utah a non-bond state. Look what happens. And they've got it.
Sure. They've got a case like that.
Yes, yeah, so commissioner can tell us all about how that works.
Look in Oregon.
Yeah. I need to excuse myself. I've got a 1 o'clock coming up. So thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I apologize for leaving.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That scenario is what I'm talking about. That investigation could have come in, and she's obviously said it was paid. And I'm just wondering how she determined it was paid, how it comes back to us, and then the other issues on whether they were even qualified. All these things come up on this board, and the way things have been set up, We can't even talk about it because we don't even know what the complaint was or anything else. In fact, that complaint initiated from this board, and if somebody else would have initiated that complaint, we never would have heard. We couldn't have given any input.
We could change the rule and monkey with the wording all day long, but the bottom line is you're not getting the information that the statute says that you should be able to get. So it'll probably be something that would be in a closed session, an investigation. Discussion. We'll have to leave that to Perry.
Is that going to put us in a bad spot, Pete?
I don't.
You're listening to this whole thing, and I know you're probably.
No, I mean, this is not the first time we talked about it. It's the first time we've introduced the Peterson issue and the realities of that. It almost looks like we've got to look at the statute because it's over and over again. Are they being paid? Was the bond collected? And it's your competitors that know that they didn't have the resources to pay that bond. No investigative group is ever going to know what they know. So this becomes a very valuable resource for the investigator, as opposed to the investigator reporting to the board. but I'd have to think about it. I'm on record. I'm opposed to us doing the investigative part, but
getting
equally on
help,
record
though.
About providing the information, because nobody knows more about the industry than the people in the industry. As an example, if I don't know who investigated it, but I think Kathy wasn't even here then. Somebody goes, "Well, were you paid for that?" And they go, "Yes." Investigation closed. Well, that's the stupidest of the scenarios, but that's likely not what happened. We'd like to see, how this was paid. This was a check, all of this other.
That's where we say get a subpoena, pull records, so, check bank accounts.
And it's come up before. Do we validate the value of property that people pledge? Well, is the validation, we're looking at the assessor's records, or do we look at all of the records and determine that, there's a piece of property in Tremont worth $65,000, and it's got $105,000 in mortgages against it. This is not collateral. This is a debt.
Well, even if the bond wasn't collateralized, is it a violation?
No, that's not.
I think that's where Craig brings it up. That's where the statute needs to be, more tight. Is what you can and cannot do.
But we don't even know.
We should be having the discussion as whether or not they're qualified to issue this. It should be clear in the statute. You need to be worth X amount of dollars to write this amount of bonds.
And it is clear.
We just
don't know.
But how can it be clear if we keep asking the same question?
Well, we don't have the ability to investigate. That's what we're saying. The commissioner has, or Kathy has, the ability to investigate and answer that question probably in 15 minutes.
So you provide a financial statement at the end of each year?
Yes.
Okay. So we know what your net worth is.
And what they qualified with. What she knows right now what each bondsman can write. She can tell us, if you get above this limit, you're over. So she can in total bonds, but that one bond, I'm going to bet, put them over.
So the highest bond in the state ever.
Yes, but they've committed two violations. I'll bet you anything, if the thing was investigated properly, you'd show they've committed two violations.
And I don't think any investigation can, to the best of their ability, giving them full credit and understanding, I don't think an investigation can be done properly without our help. I think it's not impossible.
And I think...
Yes, Wayne.
The rule, if you read the rule, it's very clear that the board should be provided the information. And you're stating it has not been provided in the past? Or is that something that...
It wasn't in the past, and then it stopped. But it might have stopped for good reason. We're trying to find this balance to where right now nothing can happen because we can't help. And so people are saying, well, there's been no complaints come in. The reason no complaints have come in is because nothing happens when it comes in, not because they're not doing their job. We're not giving them the tools to do the investigation because we don't have the tools to help with that.
So let's use this as a scenario. You have a new investigation. Investigator comes to one of you. You shouldn't discuss that with other people. If the investigator wants to go to someone else, and you shouldn't discuss it amongst yourselves.
Absolutely.
So there's got to be a wall.
For sure. What is that wall?
Well, when the complaint comes in, and it does it come in directly to the commissioner? Does it come in directly to your office?
Yes.
Why can't the board look at it, I believe you said it in the beginning, under anonymity, not knowing who the complaint is, who the company is, or that? And then write in your rules where it says, at the board meeting, after the investigation is complete, he'll present his findings. Are we getting the entirety of the investigation and the findings? And if it's under anonymity, does that solve?
At that point, it's not anonymity. They've agreed to a stipulation in order.
Why can't it still be under anonymity?
It doesn't have to be, because it's public information.
Yeah, at the very end, it doesn't have to be.
So add another step in there that before you, these are the recommended findings, before those findings are opposed and it becomes public, then have the board evaluate the investigation, make sure they're satisfied with what's been done and the appropriate findings that are going to, or whatever's going to be imposed. And then we do this in law enforcement.
In following up, so let's try this exercise. You come, or the investigator comes, and they say, we've got an investigation against blank company. And you lay out the scenario. I'm going to bet you, 100 times out of 100, they're going to have information about it, and they're going to know who it is, and they don't even have to discuss it. Because the population is too small for them, one of them, not to have been called in on this. So it would, you know, decrease the amount of time you spend on investigation and make it even more credible because you have real life, and it's not the competitors, it's the market that
exactly. And I just want to give a scenario. In this situation with the Peterson case, if that complaint came in through normal channels, remember it came in because we brought it up in this meeting, if it came in through normal channels, we never would have heard about it. None of these things could have ever been brought to the forefront. So the only conclusion they could have come up with, well, there wouldn't have been a complaint, but they couldn't have come up with any conclusion. And we wouldn't have heard.
There wouldn't have been any findings to us.
Yeah, no findings.
None. Not to beat the Peterson case to death, but
there's already been one death.
That's one case, and we're concerned about whether or not the 10% was collected or not.
Well, there's a few different concerns.
I'm telling you right now that there's an enormous amount of bail out there that 10% is not collected. Tons. Never collected.
Yeah.
And we can't do anything about that. I think we have a legislative code problem that we need to take a look at.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And that's how to address this thing, because he's not required to tell anybody if he collected the money or not. Just that the code says he's supposed to. And no one ever really finds that out. And
well,
maybe
through
we
audit,
need to address it a little bit differently.
But then the audit, you're looking at a time backwards. You should be required if you made this bond, you should have to report that you've got this 10%, and it should be auditable.
Well, they can
and
do an audit
cash
for 2 years.
And all this other stuff, and we've had early on a couple years ago a discussion that somebody wanted 10 days in which to, or 30 days in which to make a deposit if it was cash. I mean, I think that's kind
that
of
was on, that's on a different...
Yeah, but on a different thing. Like there should be a trail. I made this bond, X number of dollars, and this shows the deposit. And that shouldn't be difficult for them to have to report that.
But currently, I can make a contract with someone to pay me $1 a month on a $200,000 premium, which is, maybe that's logical, okay, to somebody, but...
Not to you.
Maybe to me, I don't know, but that's what I'm saying. But for this industry, it's not logical. It makes no sense. I think it's hurting us because that's just one bond that might be taking place on. I think that's one of our large problems in this industry today.
So if you have to collect 10%, and it should be as a one-time payment or the maximum of two-time payment.
That's been discussed over and over and over.
And it keeps getting...
You're dividing it a lot.
Instead of tightening it up, you're loosening it up.
Yeah, it keeps getting thrown out. And then the biggest thing is because it's talking about unfair marketing or whatever. I don't know. You can't restrict this. I totally agree with you. So right up front, I don't think a bond should be written unless you collect 10%.
Right.
I'm probably in the minority here. But the reason it's been explained to us is that, say somebody has a $100,000 bond and it's $10,000 premium. A lot of people can't come up with $10,000 immediately. So the bond companies are allowed to finance that premium.
But you're in business. You know, you're not a charitable organization.
Well, yes. Like I said, I agree.
But the biggest argument is this, is not only that, is, I mean, we can sit here and beat around the bush all day long, but we are in business. I mean, if I'm at the right, that if somebody wants to charge $1 for that bell bond, they ought to be able to, which I'm in the minority here over that. But, you know, like I said, because we're in business, as you put it.
I can only speak for myself, but my average bond is $2,700 per bond. That's my average. And if that's all I do, I've got to collect my 10%, or I'm just not going to be in business. But if I could do 10 $20,000 bonds this month also, in addition to that, I could do it for less than 10%, to be perfectly honest about it. But I don't do 10 $20,000 bonds. So. That's the relevancy of this whole thing, is that what type of bonds are you doing? And those are the ones that are discounting, or I use the word discounting, but they're taking payments of something down and then may not be collecting the rest of it.
The criminals, except for the white-collar criminals, don't have a lobby. You do. So if you make it more difficult, the courts are just going to start reducing the bonds.
I was going to say,
you're going to jam up the jails.
Yeah. I mean, there's the pros and cons.
Exactly. We have to follow it through.
There's got to be something in the middle here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like, and again,
Well, I'm in the minority here because I don't believe High Bell does anything for the system, period.
But what?
High Bell does not serve the system, in my opinion.
Well, it's not that they reduce the bells. It's what they do is they start kicking them out. I mean, if the bell bondsman can't get them out, the bells are always going to be high. The judge is going to put them whatever they feel like put them at. That's not something that's ever going to be in any of our controls. The control that we have is whether we jam up the jails or whether we help get them out. And
this almost comes back to the point of why is this even regulated?
Well, the 10% part of it, I'm 100% with you. I don't believe it should be regulated.
The reason it was regulated was because there were companies that weren't good companies, and they would start writing anything they could. They would go down. They would get that big bond. They get that $2 million bond or that $500,000 forfeiture. They've got 6 months to producing. They can't. They're going down. So now they start writing. You call up and your grandsons, I'll write it with no collateral and whatever you can pay me because I'm out of business in 6 months anyway. And so it was costing the state because it was encouraging people. It was encouraging unprofessional conduct.
And you had one company, one guy that wasn't a very good company, and he came right through the board and said, well, I'm gonna start a new company and it's gonna be called 5% Bell Bonds. That's gonna be the name. And that's the way it's going to be. And so it was a problem. I mean, people were calling all the time. Will you do it for 7%? Then they'd call back, well, I found a guy that would do it for 6. Will you do it for 5?
It was a
joke. And so that's why it came to that. And it has helped that, but it has created another problem.
Anybody in here that's been in the business for a period of time understands and knows that moving into a new market, or if you're a new company, it is tough duty getting some business. It just simply is. And so that is what's created the discounting on the, I won't need collateral, I won't need a good signer, I'll go with a poor signer, because I've got to establish some kind of cash flow in order to make this thing happen for me. And that's exactly what we're up against right there. I mean, I've moved into a number of markets over the years, and I tell my agent, I'll see you in 5 years, see if you're still around or not, because you're not going to get any business. Longevity's how it basically happens, unless I can advertise, you know, I've got a budget that can bear the cost. I just don't have that.
Right.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to get back to the rule. And what I've got is subsection 3, the commissioner shall present findings to the board, as the commissioner suggested, and it seemed like there was consensus there. And I guess what we're doing here is kind of informally talking about a draft rule. We're not in the formal rulemaking process, correct, Jalene?
Right.
So what I'd like to be able to do is to get whatever the board wants this rule to look like, get that input today so that we can send it to the board via either email or at our next meeting so that we can officially begin the rulemaking process. So, Lieutenant Booth, you had a point that I did not write down, but
well,
I thought it was a good one.
It sounds like to me that what is they're wanting is more information before the findings are set or the consequences, whatever is given. So, in that process, before the commissioner presents, I believe it was in the third one down, mm-hmm. shall present any additional findings to the board at the next meeting. You know, maybe there needs to be another step in there where the commissioner gives us the investigative information plus his recommended findings, so the board may, instead of shall, they have the ability to request for more, to give input, to and do it in under anonymity where the board doesn't know who the complaint was against. So just add another step in there before the findings are actually given.
That would be after one.
Pete, does that put us in danger?
No, the second I is if the board
requests
additional information.
Yeah.
So they would. You're asking to come to us first before they come to some conclusion.
Right.
Near a conclusion.
And the information that we're asking for there under anonymity does not put us in any
Right, you don't know who
you don't know who it
you
is.
You may know who it is, but that's
what I'm saying. If we take those names out there, we can help with the investigation, because in this one we can say there was a situation where a $2 million bond was written, it was in your company, blah, blah, blah. You can go through and say everything without, you could even say Peterson, you just couldn't say the bond company.
You know, I still come back to, I think we waste a lot of time in government about changing words when we have what we need already.
Exactly.
And we're just not doing it. If you look at 1C, at the next, so 1 is talking about investigations completed in the following manner. The department gets a complaint. The commissioner gives a copy to the person being complained about. They get a chance to respond. And then 1C, at the next meeting of the board, the commissioner shall present to the board the complaint and the action undertaken by the department to investigate the complaint. Now, maybe we could put there, Lieutenant Booth, and get feedback from the board. Would that fit
would that,
there?
Well, and that's what, as long as it's under anonymity and we haven't opened it to public record yet, because your rule clearly states it should. Obviously, we're having a discussion because it's clearly not happening. Am I right?
We spent all this time with the little eyes, the eyes that should have been up here.
Right. This
because
is
that's a good place for it to be. At the next meeting, okay, look at the first one. The subject of the complaint shall provide to the commissioner a written response to the complaint within 15 days. Okay.
Right.
Then, at the next meeting, the board, the commissioner shall present to the board the complaint and the action taken. Well, it shouldn't be action taken. It should be the regarding the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So when you got put on the board today, I'm just curious, did they have you sign a big confidentiality agreement?
No.
And the reason they didn't is because when I got on, they made me sign all these documentations for, making sure I didn't
confidentiality agreement.
That I didn't have to talk about anything. Now they don't bother with it for the simple fact that it doesn't matter.
We couldn't tell anybody anything.
Non-disclosure.
Perry from the Perry Babbles is her name. She is the bail bond board's, I guess, legal representative from the AG's office. She'll go through that with you. I don't have that information.
It's
we're in a public meeting right now, so there's no.
Well, no, but that's what I'm saying is we don't have nothing that constitutes her having to sign that, because we don't go into the executive sessions or we don't do anything like that anymore.
Well, it's because we may not have had a need in the past.
Right.
Well, we used to always, because we always had information.
Because you had information that was not to be shared with the public.
Exactly. Correct. We want to get the information
again,
that doesn't put
in
us
in error. Okay.
But now we want to get as much information as we can so this machine starts to work again, because the way it is now, it's broke.
Well, they're in error since 1998 then.
Yeah. Wayne?
Hey, so maybe I'm with you, Brett. I wouldn't change much here at all, except the thing that I would like to see is, in the event that the department doesn't act on the recommendation fully, then there's an explanation why. That's it.
I don't know that you can take action without having...
Well, maybe after they...
Now you're back to the eyes.
Yes. Prior to the action
taken. Yeah, I think I just had to see and get feedback from the board.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it's not complaint and the action taken. It's regarding the investigation is where they want to be brought in.
Well, it's the complaint and the action undertaken to investigate. So I think action is modifying investigate.
Well, it's not the way it's written now.
Down all this stuff.
It would have to be
action is a verb.
Remember that law change you wanted to do when we
and the action undertaken by the department to investigate.
And all of our authority law.
So,
but the action is referring to the investigation.
It did.
Mm-hmm. We could. You work on that.
Okay.
But and then the board is a resource. That's really what everybody's asking for. Use us.
Well, it just
exactly.
Looks like to me they're just
make
asking
this machine
to
work.
For that you follow what the rule already is?
Yeah.
I don't think that the commissioner has any ability to rule on these things because he doesn't have the information.
Well,
and we don't have any information to help him. Neither one of us. We're frustrated. They're frustrated. Nothing is working. We just got to find a way for the information to come through the channel. And once it starts to flow, I think we're going to see a completely different board, completely different outcome. the complaints that are handled are going to be handled in a different manner completely.
I would just say one word of caution. The reality is, as Pete pointed out, it is a very small world, and so even though we make every all strides to do everything anonymously, I don't know how anonymous it may ultimately be. And then, of course, we as board members have an obligation to keep it confidential.
Absolutely.
Well, I think I've gotten some feedback as far as some minor tweaks to this rule, but I it seems to me that we, as far as the law goes, we have probably the tool we need. We just need to execute.
So the intent. So when we leave this meeting, do we understand that the intent, whatever we put in there, is going to be that we are going to have the information on the complaint and through the investigation without with the anonymity of the names?
Did you get that, Jolene, for the minutes?
Well, hopefully we've got it on the recording. Want to do that again?
Let's just highlight it, because I think that's kind of the culmination of the discussion.
Okay. That we will have, the intent is that we will have the information of the complaint, the information as the investigation goes forward of the complaint with the anonymity of the names. And we will have full disclosure of the findings of the complaint, and at that point it becomes public record and we would even know who it was. Is that correct?
That's when you're done with little lies.
Yeah.
But prior to that action, you need, if the recommendations are not going to be fulfilled, you need to why. Why not? Tell us why you're not going
to
do that.
I guess we would add to that at the end of the findings, if it is not followed through, have an explanation of why not.
Well, I'd like to think that it's not followed through, but that you're not hearing the reason why you didn't see a prosecution or...
When I say follow through, I mean having it come back to us.
And
so,
well, I'm just
not the investigation. But again,
a lot of those are
hitting dead ends because they don't have the information and the expertise that we can add to it to make that a complete investigation.
Okay.
Anybody else want to beat that horse? Pete, does that sound like we're okay?
That sounds like we need discussion.
Okay. Just going to get back to work. New business, elect chair and co-chair, Brett.
Yeah, this was a bad meeting for everyone to miss. This would, again, normally be something that Perry would do, but the statute... in the duties of the board, and the obligation very simply says, the board shall annually elect one of its members as a chair. As you know, the board consists of 8 members. Only 7 of them are voting. I'm the non-voting member. And so...
I vote we keep it the same as the paper says there, and then Jolene doesn't have to change anything.
He was actually co-chairman last year. Yeah. Didn't get credit for it. He's co-chairman, and Brad's chairman.
I second that.
All in favor?
All in favor?
Who's co-chairman?
All opposed?
He.
No, Ryan is co-chairman. He didn't get credit for it last year. He needs credit.
So the motion is... re-elect Brad as the chair and Ryan, elect him as the co-chair, and that motion was made by Gordon.
Right.
And seconded by
Craig. All in favor?
Unanimous.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Nice try, sir.
Is there anything else that anybody needs to discuss? We have a gentleman here that...
My name is Doug Pearson. I'm with All Area Bail Bonds, and I have a problem with the Bail Bond Association, and they're taking over the jail with the lists that they're making. Every jail that I find out all of a sudden I'm not getting calls from, I found out it's a jail that they've gone in and they've taken over the list, and their list is biased and it's unfair. It's divided into 2 lists. They have a heading under one in bold black letters, bonding areas or bonding companies, local, and then they have another list out of the area bonding companies. In small letters below that, where basically we never have a chance of making it to the top of the list. I've talked with Mr. Pappas. He has given me reasons as to why they've done it, and basically it was because they had a vote in their association and popular opinion decided that was the way they were going to do it. I expect to have equal representation at every jail that my agents are working. If they live in Salt Lake City, but they have told me that they will cover Park City, I expect to be on the list in Park City with a chance to be on the top of the list. If I have an agent in Farmington and is working the Weber County Jail, he shouldn't have to be dealing with a list that says agents on the light board, and then below that in small letters, other agencies. And I find this list at Twilla, Box Elder, Weber, Park City, every place where I'm a new company. I admit it, I've only been in business for a couple of years, and like they said, it's tough to get into it. And I've told my agents, hey, this is a part-time business. You're not going to get into it and make $30,000. It's a supplemental income. And because of that, I have given these agents the opportunity to work a couple jails under the understanding that they would work every bond and not just the big bonds. I told them, if I found out you were not responding because you didn't think it was worth your while to go to a small bond, then I would take that jail away from you and get somebody else. But I want my agents to be able to make some money at it. And when I find out that they're not getting calls from these jails because I'm being discriminated against on a list, then I've told Mr. Pappas that my next recourse is to file a lawsuit. And so basically I'm here just to make the you aware of the fact that that's what will happen if I can't get satisfaction.
Okay, well, go ahead, Brett.
You know, I'm not familiar with the list and the action that the association is doing, but as the insurance department, we have an obligation to make certain that, and I'm not that familiar with the list and how it works, but I do know that it must rotate and that it, yeah. But I don't know if someone can speak to that more clearly. But this body, this board, does not have any authority over the association. The association is a private association.
We
do have a legal authority, or the insurance department, with the help of the board to investigate, does have a responsibility to make certain that the boards or the lists or whatever, however they're used in the different jails are, what is it, alphabetical, and then they move up, they change, they rotate, or they have a scrolling.
Well, I think the only...
It depends. There's electronic reader board, and then there's a typed list also. And the type list goes in a form of a snake. So there might be two or three columns. It'll go like this, the person at the top, and then he goes back to the bottom. After 1 month, or at the top of the list, or the left-hand top for 1 full month. A scrolling electronic board, it rotates hundreds of times per day, so it shows up the name and phone number of that company.
So I think the only thing he's saying that he's finding unfair is listing the out-of-area agents and the in-area agents. Is that correct?
There's two different lists. I didn't come prepared, but I've got a picture on my phone of what I took 2 nights ago. If you want to look
at it. But what I'm saying is, what's unfair about it? That's what I...
The fact is that the little list out of the area is a separate list. It never has a chance to rotate to the top of the main list in big, bold, black letters.
Well, the one...
And it shouldn't be a title.
So is the only thing you're
local
finding...
Local bonding companies and out-of-the-area bonding companies, because Weber County accepts fax bonds. I can live in Monticello, Utah, and still fax a bond there. If my agent is in Salt Lake City and she tells them, okay, it's going to be an hour before I can meet you there, is it all right?
So is the only thing that you're finding unfair here is the fact that there's two lists.
Lists, and one of them is in small letters, and it's not rotated to the top of the main list.
That's all I was curious about.
I want is an equal opportunity to write a bond. List rotated like it's supposed to be, and where there's a chance sometime, I'll get the top of the list. The way it is now,
Let me ask you this. If you were on the reader board, you would be at the top. You would have the opportunity to have your name and number up there hundreds of times, instead of waiting 3 years to get to the top of the list.
Okay, and now
so
I'll
that's why they do the reader board.
Okay, the reader board is where?
Weaver County, Salt Lake County.
No, it's in Salt Lake.
Weaver and Salt Lake and Davis, they're all slowly moving into the reader boards.
Where is the light board? And they says, well, it's out here in the logging and booking. That same list is back in the blocks. There's no reader board back in the blocks where the inmates have access to the phone. There's only two little places, and I complain. I says, I could get on the reader board if I saw it beneficial. I've been there and I've looked at it, and I said, maybe I'm slow, but I see a name and a phone number, and before I can memorize the phone number, it's somebody else. So basically, I told them, it's not worth it for me to pay $200 to get on your light board when I can go to Home Depot and buy my own light board for $75.
Well, every jail has a chair.
Well, but what I'm saying, since then, they slowed it down a little bit, and I told them, I says, if I can see a benefit here, I'll be more than happy to. But as long as you're discriminating against me because of popular vote in the Bail Bond Association.
Well, that's the other question I have is if the majority, if it's good for the majority, but it doesn't work for you.
That doesn't make it the right.
I understand that, but the majority of the people agree that the system works.
No, the majority of the people that showed up that day.
No, it's the majority, and it's worked for a number of years, and every jail has their own different system, so it's kind of hard to balance them all and make them all happy, but the majority feels that it works, but you don't feel it works, so the whole system should be changed and done away with.
If there was a light board in every jail, there's not. You've got one light board you're talking about, but yet there's five or six different jails that are using your same...
Yeah, but most jails have a light board.
No. Salt Lake,
Spanish Fork, Weaver,
Severe Town. Let me point out, does the prisoner have a pencil?
No.
Probably not.
Not in booking.
Okay. So now it's going across, so that's unfair to almost everybody. So my question to you, though, because you're talking about fairness, are you the only party that's listed in the out of
area agencies? But I guess either they don't care, or maybe they're not interested in writing in that area.
How did they get on that list if they're not interested in writing in that area?
They have a local number.
They call up either the local agent that's providing that list, or they call me up.
And you put it down.
Yeah. You know, as a consumer,
it's just an interested party, yeah.
As a consumer, if I was in jail, I would want to know who is local and who is out, because when I want to bond out
exactly.
Now.
I want to bring something out. Association, and Wayne can probably speak to this better than I, but when they developed this system, everybody would like a uniform system throughout all the jails and throughout every county. But what happens is you've got some jails won't allow a reader board in. Some jails wouldn't allow a list. Some jails wanted signs. There was no uniformity. There were some people that you wouldn't have even had a chance to be on a list because they wouldn't let you put up signs. They had their own bondsmen they wanted to use, and that's who got used. There weren't any lists. And so what happened is they tried to find something that would be uniform that every jail would go along with. The association has bared the burden of printing those lists every month, rotating those lists every month, and I can tell you, the thought of wanting getting to the top, it is 3 years to get to the top.
And sometimes longer.
Sometimes longer. We've tracked it, and honestly, it doesn't make a lot of difference. But what it's come down to is you can't get every sheriff, every jail to agree. If there's a better system out there, Katie can probably speak to this. You can't. We would love to have a system that every sheriff and every jail agreed upon. I don't know of any system. I think, not that this is perfect, but I think it's the best thing so far. And
I agree.
Katie can speak to that.
We got rid of the light board. We used to have a light board. We used our own light board, and we got rid of the light board because of, you know, we don't allow them to have pencils in booking.
Okay, now go look at your list when you go home, and you'll see in bold black letters.
Oh, I know exactly
locals,
what you're
and
talking.
Then off to the side, other agencies. So I don't have to live in Park City.
None of.
If I'm 20 minutes away, if I've got an agent in Salt Lake. But I bet you she can respond just as fast as a local agent.
But as Brett said, as a consumer, it's better for the people to know.
With them, and she says, hey, I'm an hour away if you want to call somebody else.
I don't know what out of the area means.
That means they're not in there. So the one last point I'm going to tell you is this. More so than the list, I think your biggest problem is that, you know, I used to, 10 years ago when you get collect calls and stuff from jails, it was a lot easier to get the collect calls. Now all the jails are going into this new, I want to make money off their collect calls. I'll actually give that to Summit County, not you, but Salt Lake, Davis. Davis used to be free calls by the inmates. All of a sudden they come out with this new thing. I get a call the other day, it's like $4 and something cents a call because Davis all of a sudden gets a little greedy. I think if you got a problem, the biggest thing would be to make it so these people could call out
Free of charge,
or something more reasonable. When they use the regular collect call system, it was great, but you'll find that I'll bet you that most of the time it's a retired jailer who's found some way to make some money. He goes to his old boss and says, hey, how about we, let me get in on this little collect call racketing. The problem that I find is I have a hard time even receiving some of those collect calls because all of a sudden I've got a Comcast phone line and it don't match up to their... to their regular to
the
question.
Prisoner's entitled to a free call. No, not a free call. Entitled to a phone call.
Somebody's got to pay for it.
They can pay for it themselves, or they can accept the call.
But my point is you can't accept them most of the time now. I mean, depending on the system the jail has.
You get an account with Comcast, you get an account with Sirius, you can.
I know, but it used to be so
technical.
It used to be a collect call, you got it on your phone bill. But I'm just saying you're finding that there's different things that are causing more grief than this list.
Let me tell you this. One of the reasons it went to that is because there are a lot of frustrated jailers and frustrated sheriffs that got sick and tired of saying that they can't get a hold of somebody or they're going to be too long or having complaints. That was actually instigated by sheriffs that said, we want to list or take them off. There were some sheriffs that said, if they're not local, we don't want them on. And that which you would have not even been on, because they can dictate who's in their jail. Now, the Monticello jail, I'm going to tell you, it used to be, there was no sign. You didn't even have a chance, because they had a bondsman they worked with, and until the list got in there, you would have never been on that list, period. But that's how that list started, was it was started by a sheriff that did not want those people on the list. So we said, can we put them on as out of area in case they do have a bondsman they like? At least they can find the number and use them if they'd like to. You don't understand the fight that's been fought. We would all like something different. But one thing I can suggest, get a local number. Get a local number and you'll be on that local list.
If there's a reader board,
end of
get
story.
On the reader board.
And get on the reader board. Just get a local number and you're automatically
forced to have to do that, is what I'm saying.
Yes, but the rest of us all do that.
Just like every other bonding company in the state of Utah, I pay the same fees, adhere to the same rules and regulations. I should not be forced to have to do that to get on the main list.
But they've all had to do that, though, to get on.
We all have to have local numbers.
Your grievances against the association for this board, your grievances against
the jail.
I talked to the sheriff in Davis County.
This guy.
If you choose, I talked to the jail commander. She said, I need you to talk to the sheriff. She agreed with me. I set up a meeting. I went to the sheriff. We looked at it. We had a meeting. He agreed with me. He says, I am going to meet with my county attorney, and I will call you tomorrow. He met with the county attorney, called me, and said, the county attorney finds us liable. I'm going to take the list back over. I will call you Monday after our meeting and get it straightened out. A week later, I get a call from Mr. Pappas. And that's when he explains everything as to what he's doing. And I tell him, and he says, well, I will bring it up with the association and we will get the list changed. A couple months later, still no calls. I go up there. All he did was change the heading on the list. But the jail commander and the attorneys were on my side.
Well, the other part, when you're only telling one part of the story, your story, everybody's on your side.
No, when you get all the facts.
I was told since Kathy wasn't going to be here that it would be a waste of time to come here. But I came anyway because I wanted my grievance to be in the minutes. Because like I said, I told Mr. Pappas, if I have to file a lawsuit to get fair representation, I will.
Let me tell you what happened in Davis County when somebody did that. Davis County took everything out.
All
everything. And we had to get together, Yeah, let's see how you like
I'm
that.
I'm out of it now anyway, so what is it?
There's nothing in there, and the only way you're going to get a phone call is you're going to have to be a company that's been in business for 20 years.
Or
and it was a fight for us to get a list back in there. That's what's going to happen.
Well, then I would suggest you straighten up the list so that there's no problem. Okay. Well, all you have to do is just put one list, all the same size, and rotate it to where I have a chance to
for you. This. Do you remember the association?
No, I'm not. I don't want to be a member of somebody that treats everybody else like that. It's unfair. It's unethical.
This isn't an issue for this board.
No, this is
so we're going to adjourn the meeting.
Just so for information, in 1998, it was Davis County who required us to change this system. It was that very jail that said, you guys better come up with something different, or we're just going to eliminate you completely. And so this is the system that we developed. We've enhanced it a few times over the years. You said you've been in business for the last couple of years, but 9 of those jails already had that list going prior to you getting into business. 2 of them have changed since you've been in business. So, I mean, it's something that we've all dealt with for a long, long time, most of us, and we agree that this is still a better system for the
so I will fight you until I get the representation. I don't care about.
Well, I think you do.
What?
I think you do the line.
Not all meetings in that exciting, but
that's miles compared to what I deal with on a daily basis.
Oh yeah.
That's nothing.
So this is a this is a nice break.
This is a great break. Yes. I didn't have anybody swearing at me or trying to attack me. It was beautiful.